PSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Henry Sokolsky, the Executive Director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. Rafael Grossi is the head of the IAEA, the UN watchdog for nuclear proliferation and its violators. Speaking at COP28 in Dubai, a petrostate, irony enough there, Mr. Grossi is speaking very positively of the answer for sustainable energy, the answer for climate change, and the answer for doing away with the products of petrostates is nuclear energy, nuclear power plants. Henry, a very good evening to you. This is an old idea that's suddenly new again in Mr. Grossi's mind. What do we know about nuclear power plants and what becomes of them in time in all the states that have practiced this idea that nuclear energy is the future? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Short answer is, if you put reactors in the wrong place, and we've done it, you get a bomb. And North Korea, India, Pakistan, Iraq, with any bad luck, Iran. And Mr. Grossi, to his credit, said, we got to worry about that. Well, he seems to be Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in that he promotes the very problem that he claims we need to worry about. You need to be careful where you put these things. And I don't think it's smart to put them in the Middle East. Now, again, to his credit, he says the Middle East could be a challenge. But you don't get the sense that he would ever say no. Trouble ahead. Why? When you have a nuclear peaceful plant that's even safeguarded, as they did in Iran, what do you get? Oh, well, they use Bushehr, in this case, Bushehr Power Station, peaceful, safeguarded, as an acquisition front, and they did. And I learned about this when I served on a commission where we had the highest level of classifications, and we found out that they used Bushehr as a purchasing agent for everything that went into the bomb project in Iran. And bad news, we found out about it after all the stuff had arrived. This is a pattern, and therefore the idea that you can have your peaceful nuclear energy in a troublesome place without the prospect of a nuclear weapon is, I think, historically delusional. Heads up, Saudi Arabia is our next stop.
The world wants more nuclear energy as a means to fight climate change. That is the case that Mr. Grossi is making at COP28. Now, there are many other opinions in COP28, but I note King Charles III speaks there as well. To your understanding, is any of the trustworthy states, I'm looking at Europe, for example, reversing their opinion of nuclear energy? Is Germany ready to go back to nuclear energy? Are other states ready to go?
I think others are, but not Germany. That's not happening, not Austria. But, maybe Italy, because they go back and forth. Bottom line is, it's the government, stupid, that's going to pay for this, and the public, not the vendor. This is not a profit-making activity. This is giving it the office. You're going to have to spend many, many more times what either renewables or natural gas would afford, to say nothing of coal, to get this energy. And what you're going to discover is something that most economists in nuclear power utilities, as well as environmentalists, long understood. If you buy something that's expensive and slow to build, it can be totally bereft of any emissions and yet be a really dumb investment to reduce emissions generally. In other words, if you can do cheaply, quickly, something that eliminates, let's say, half as much emissions as you were previously emitting, you do that rather than something super expensive, super lengthy, which is so far the track record for nuclear power. So the jury's out, but it's a government game. It is not something investors who want to make a return on investment are going to be making.
Not only a bad idea, but we can't afford it. So we go to a report from the National University of Defense Technology. This is a Bill Gertz report from the Washington Times. What I take from this, Henry, is that the People's Republic of China is developing sophisticated hypersonic missiles. What is a hypersonic missile?
Something that travels, frequently five or more times the speed of sound, that is capable of aerial control when it comes to its close to its target and is in the atmosphere, and therefore it's very difficult to predict its flight path to knock out with missile defenses. And these things right now are being developed relatively short range, but what's going on is the Chinese are trying to develop intercontinental range ones. Now, they tested one in the format of what's called a fractional orbiting missile. And this thing was fired into space and then bounced off the top of the atmosphere and went very, very long distance. So China military power annual report from the Pentagon says you can expect to see these things soon enough, probably within this decade from China. And that raises all sorts of worries because they can be accurate enough to be non-nuclear. And that is a point that the Pentagon has made. Opens up a whole new, brand new set of targets that are different than just missile silos and submarine ports where our nuclear missiles might be.
The report indicates something called the DF-17. Is that what we're talking about with a potential range of 25,000 miles?
Excuse me, what was the range of the 17?
25,000.
Oh, 25,000.
Yeah.
Well, that would do it.
Arms races are compelling is because both sides eventually counter each other. To your knowledge, is there a counter for a ballistic missile that can go, what would you say, five times the speed of sound and range 25,000 miles? Do we have a counter?
Not yet. We're trying to get a warning system up in low Earth orbit. That will help. We are working on, active defenses, but I think this in the first stage is going to be one of these problems where you're going to be pointing spears at one another before you get very adequate shields up.
And the reason that you emphasize, again, non-nuclear warhead, why is that an advantage, Henry? We have 30 seconds.
Well, you might use it, and there might not be an appropriate, easy response. I mean, if they knock out, let's say, an electrical power plant or, a port facility, and there are very few casualties, but we can't deploy any troops, let's say, to protect South Korea or Taiwan, what's a fellow to do? Whereas if there's a nuclear weapon, the rejoinder is, oh, well, then we fire a nuclear weapon back at them and, everyone stops in their tracks. I don't know how one stops in the tracks with this kind of exchange that's non-nuclear.
Mr. Grossi is promoting the idea of nuclear proliferation in the course of answering the question about climate change. China is promoting the idea that we can make you have a very bad afternoon and we'll be on Taiwan where you're still getting your boots on. Henry Sikorsky, Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. I'm John.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.